Dennis Britton. This is Erin. How can I help you?
Hey, Erin. I am having some trouble and I need some assistance with the line between 504s and IEPs.
Oh, it's kind of a moving one, isn't it? Is this one on whether the district needs to evaluate or what are we talking about?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I have a parent who is adamant their child's 504 plan is not working. The student has been on a 504 for about 6 months, but the parent is done and is requesting an IDEA evaluation. My team does not know if they suspect a disability that would require specially designed instruction at this time. Now, the teachers are saying that they can add more to the 504 plan, and I'm not sure where to draw this line. Can you help?
Welcome to Season 2 of On the Call, Ennis Britton's Special Education Law Podcast. I'm Erin Wessendorf-Wortman.
And I am Jeremy Neff.
And we are ready to dig into this call. So I find with these calls, Jeremy, that it's a matter of judgment. And I know that when individuals call us, right, clients call us, we can't give away attorney-client privileged information. But in any of those conversations, it's one where I think judgments can be made at varying levels and to varying degrees. Some people can say, evaluate the world, who cares, right? But I don't know that we have the resources for that. Every school psych would probably murder us both for saying that comment.
You think?
Right? We know that they're overworked. And we also know that in looking at this, we've had, you know, state departments even say you need to identify less kids. And so when you have comments like that, I think districts are more reticent to really look at, do we need to evaluate? But it goes back to child find.
Yeah, well, and I think to sum up what you just said, if everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. And so, you know, that's been impressed upon us in recent years, I think, as we've tried to do even more with less. So yeah, when we're talking about child find, we do have law on this that tells us what to do. And there's some slight variations between 504 and IDEA, right?
Just slight, minor.
Yeah.
No.
No. but you know, as far specific to child find even. But, you know, what we're looking for here is, first of all, 504, step back every time. What are we talking about? An anti-discrimination statute. As simple as that.
Equal opportunity.
Yep.
Mainly for, you know, disability. I refer to it as equal opportunity offenders, but that's how I live my life. I offend everyone equally. But it is. We're not discriminating on the basis of disability. We're allowing everyone, we're trying to equalize the opportunities that are available for all through accommodations and modifications, supports that might be needed based on disability. But for 504 disability, and I know you and I can go back and forth, is it substantial, significant?
Substantial. Yeah. So the definition is much simpler under 504 as well. Everything is less as far as like definitions, regulations, everything. We're just looking for, is there a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits a major life activity? And don't overthink it.
Or more than one.
One or more major life activities. And really, it's that substantial limitation that seems to be kind of the money part of that definition.
But then when we look at it when compared with the IDEA, so when you're stuck in a situation like this caller has where you've had a 504, parents are saying it's not working, you question whether it's working or not. Maybe you just need different supports, accommodations, modifications, or you need to remind your gen ed staff or your other staff that they actually need to do the accommodations and modifications. How do we then look at it to say, okay, this is the definition under 504. We all agree your child has met this, but we may or may not agree that your child meets the definition under IDEA of a child with a disability.
And this is really where it comes down to us helping understand whether it's an inadequate 504 versus a child who actually needs an IEP. So our difference here, our definition of a child with a disability under IDEA, is we've got specific definitions across the country. We got 13 categories, more or less. There might be an extra one depending. So we've got definitions of disabilities that a child needs to fit within, plus, and this is a really important plus, because of that disability, the child requires specially designed instruction, which might be related services depending on the circumstance, if they in effect are specially designed instruction. So that's the big difference, right? So we're replacing physical or mental impairment with these specific disability categories, and we're saying that there needs to be instruction, specially designed instruction, not just accommodations.
So you're looking at more than having, fine, you have this, my words are keeping up with me today. In looking at that substantial limitation, we're not working through that substantial limitation to get you that equal opportunity. We're now looking at your disability that falls in one of these categories, not only looks at, hey, a substantial limitation, but we also, because of that, require instruction or related services to help you gain access and receive a free appropriate public education to allow you to make progress in the general education.
Yeah, more aspirational, right?
Yes. And so I do think it's fair for districts to maybe be confused when you're stuck between the two, right?
And parents. Really fair for them to be confused, because I think shorthand, a lot of folks think IEP is better. And they're different. They serve different purposes.
Absolutely. So now that we know what the law says, let's look at one example of how, you know, a Department of Education in our lovely state of Ohio
has applied this law.
The heart of it all. Whatever. It's really, I mean, I'm sure I love Ohio. It's, yeah. I mean, I live here, so I think I have to say
we live in Cincinnati. I don't think that's Ohio.
No. Because on Fridays, we do not wear scarlet and gray.
I do.
Yeah. Well, that's fair, but that's because you're not from Cincinnati originally.
Fair.
But in any event, in looking at this case, it came out of Ohio in early 23. So not that old by the time we're recording this, right? Mm-hmm. But very, maybe 10,000 foot view, get into the weeds a little when we can. Student was identified with ADHD, I'm sorry, diagnosed and identified with ADHD and depressive disorder in late 21. So talk about November, December 21. By the time March of 22 rolls around, student is on a 504 plan. So probably follow the right evaluation procedures. We have an eval on a 504. It's continued and redone the following year. So student is on a 504 plan, no problem. Grades are B's and C's, maybe a D within there. Discipline was a smattering. So we're looking at the first school year he's on this 504. He has a 3-day suspension for unwelcome conduct with a peer. The next year, it's not fully clear what happens, kind of moves to alternative school for a little bit, and then has a 5-day suspension. Again, unwelcome conduct, harassment, intimidation. So looks to be some peer interaction issues,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But with that, and as I think happens with a lot of parents, when a student is disciplined, they're not in school, we get a little itchy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're like, something else must be going on. So the parents go and get a private evaluation. So private evaluation finds, you know, even said in the eval, kiddo could be supported by informal accommodations, or, which 504 is not really informal accommodations, but said a 504 or an IEP is fine. But when you read into the eval more, look at a full-scale IQ in the fourth percentile. So you're looking at low 70s at that point, which in and of itself does not indicate a need for an IEP, but did indicate some...
It's a red flag.
It is a red flag.
Yeah.
Did indicate some cognitive functioning down in the low, extremely low range. Adaptive behavior, low, extremely low. And so as a result of that, of course, what the family does, right? They got itchy from the discipline. They got the eval. They give it to the school. With it, they request a functional behavior assessment and a BIP, which seems a little strange to me, but I guess with peer interaction, fine. And they also indicated, here, this should give us the IEP in the email.
The old prescription pad IEP, huh?
Correct, but I think supported by an eval.
Sure.
At least from the parent perspective. And so district rightly responded and said, hey, thank you for the eval. We're going to review this to determine if areas of need are in line with IDEA or 504. I think an absolute appropriate response. Right? I think where the facts get a little wonky is it's not clear to me when reading the decision that the team, including the parents, ever sat down as maybe a suspicion meeting to sit down to say, hey, let's look at this eval, let's look at these facts, and let's pull in everything else the student is doing to determine if the student's needs align with a 504 or possibly an evaluation under IDEA.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here.
Sure.
We often deal with incomplete facts when
yep.
we're reading decisions. Is it clear if the 504 team convened to consider whether there should be changes to the 504 based on this private
evaluation?
There's
no mention in the decision out of the state. Now, that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. It just might mean that the state didn't determine it was a relevant factor. But I also disagree with how the state found its final decision.
Yeah. So, we don't like how this one plays out. You just wonder, sometimes when we leave something open, and this is going to tie into what you're going to share here, I think, when we leave something open to interpretation because we don't fill it in, right? So here, if it was, hey, we took this evaluation, we concluded we still don't suspect a disability, but we do want to make sure we're considering what we do with 504. Great, we've filled in the blank for what we do with that. Sometimes if we leave it open, it makes it a little too easy for someone from the outside to make those assumptions, which I think might be what happened here.
Well, and I think that's exactly what happened here, because then the State Department decided on behalf of the school what should happen, because the parents got upset that they weren't going to get an IEP, filed the state complaint, and the state said, we are ordering an evaluation under IDEA. And it was a little strange to me because they didn't rely on any of those things where you and I would say, oh, that outside eval maybe raised some red flags, right? Instead, they said, listen, even though when you first got the evaluation, the students' grades were passing in every class, but it might have been ELA or science, doesn't matter. The grades declined for the next two quarters. So the State Department, by the time they reached their decision in March of 23, I think it was, they had all of those months of being able to see the records from maybe the two quarters of declining grades, whereas when the district was making the evaluation decision, they had all but one passing grade.
Right.
Right. And so the State Department ignored the outside eval, ignored what the facts were at the time the district made the decision, and said, school, you had two quarters of declining grades. You should have evaluated the student.
Yeah, we don't normally look to that, do we? Because we don't get to say, hey, we've got two quarters of straight A's, therefore there's no disability.
No, you can't do that. We don't only rely on grades. But I use it as we always use these cases, right? Mm-hmm. You and I could disagree with every single State Department decision. We don't. Some are fine. We could disagree with IHOs and court decisions, but we use them as learning cases.
Right.
So what do we learn from sort of those sorts of areas when we go, all right, State Department, I didn't like this.
Yeah, so we've got some lessons from this case, this decision. Let's turn to what then are some practical tips related to 504s, especially when there's a question of, is it time to move on to IDEA eligibility?
And I think hearkening back to an earlier episode this season, verifying your staff have been trained in 504.
Yes.
And have received copies of students' 504s. And have been implementing the 504s.
Yeah, just that process and being, again, it's one of those where if we leave something open to interpretation, it can certainly go against us, or it could really turn out that we're not doing our job because people don't know that they're even supposed to be doing it.
Well, and take it from the parent's perspective. If you've come into a meeting as a parent and you're saying, listen, here's an evaluation. I want my kiddo to be evaluated under IDEA. Mm-hmm. And a school district looks at you and says, we need to actually verify this 504 is working. I don't know that a school would ever say this, but maybe they would. Our team hasn't really been implementing this. We'd like to make sure we can implement it with fidelity before moving forward. That doesn't play well. Right. As a school, we're obligated to follow that 504 as we have it written. So let's not have it be 5,000 pages long with all of the accommodations printed out from the Google. Right.
The old checklist, shopping list is how I like to describe it. Shopping list of accommodations. Yeah, I'll take them all.
I would love them all.
I care about my kid.
Or just myself. I mean, I think I need them all. Extra time, chunked out lessons.
I don't think there's anybody in this firm that does more like self-accommodation than me. You like walk in, you're like, oh, I see you have another visual reminder to yourself. Oh, I see you have another clock.
You got a lot of timers up in there.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm a believer. Yeah.
And that's perfectly – I own three in my home. This is not an advertisement for Time Timer. Let's be clear. But I do think –
They're amazing.
They are amazing. Verifying the implementation of that 504, talking with your teachers. You know, maybe you're the district that you're like, yeah, I train them all. We give them all copies. They know what they're doing. Okay. Then in these situations where you don't know where to go, having the internal prep meeting, perfectly fine. We're not predetermining, right? And case law has said this. But having that internal meeting to discuss what are the teachers seeing, is an accommodation like preferential seating to reduce distractions, the ability to stand because we fidget, right? Which might mean that you are sitting in the front side corner of the room. It's not close to the teacher, but you have the ability to stand. So you are in a distraction-free environment and you are not distracting others. Are you actually doing that? Does that help with certain things or not? Those are all, I think, really key to look at when having this discussion.
Yeah. And I think also not just what's actually going on in school and what could we do to accommodate, but what are all the different sources of information we have? And I think that really ties into this case where, again, we have to fill in a lot of blanks, but there is a question of, were all the different sources of information, not just the outside evaluation, not just the 504 evaluation, but things like grades, attendance, behavior records, was all of that being considered by the 504 team in relation to the student's disability and how to accommodate it?
Well, behavior, I go with discipline, but 6 to 1 half dozen of another. But even anymore, when looking at students with maybe work avoidance or school-based anxiety, which, you know, you're seeing maybe more and more of, or I would prefer less, but, you know, fine. Bringing in the school counselor, maybe if an outside party who's coming into the table to talk about what's going on with that student, what can be done or not done. And that way you can have input that's quality for full review at a suspicion meeting, right? Both an internal prep meeting and then when you bring the parents in. Because, I mean, I've sat through meetings even within the last week where parents have been surprised to learn certain things about their child. Right, wrong, or indifferent. I mean, again, I think you and I go to meetings where things are not sunshine, poppy dogs, and rainbows. And so sometimes what happens at school is a better picture than what the parents are seeing at home. Mm-hmm. But having staff being able to readily speak to that can help calm an angry parent, or to at least dissuade them from thinking what they're seeing at home must be happening at school. Therefore, I need an evaluation under IDEA.
Well, and along those lines, also the staff giving parents context, because I think we parent in a very different way than we have in almost the entire history of humanity. We're islands. And, you know, I could do a whole podcast series about that and what's wrong with that. But it is where we are, and it was exacerbated right around the time that this family got their first diagnosis, late 2021. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of parents who wouldn't necessarily have had a really good gauge of what does a typical kid look like in late 2021. Right? Yeah, you can't see it, but the face hair and man. Yeah, we had little people through that. We still have little people.
Mine aren't so little. They just keep. But my height differential, to me, you're like, yeah, yours are still little because you're still feet above them. Feet.
Right.
Feets. I'm not anymore. Right. I'm.
Yeah, my oldest is trying to catch up.
I can't even say foot above some of them. I know. It's really not ideal, but it's fine. It's just fine.
But so that context is important just because, like you said, it's not just that maybe we don't see what they see at school. What they see at home, we don't necessarily see at school. But also what they see at home may not be that different from typical.
Correct. It might very well be normal. Mm-hmm. But I also think, at least in looking at this case, what was a piece that was a flag to me is the district was saying, listen, we are trying to do things for your child, but really it's about your child's motivation. Mm-hmm. And that's why we don't think, that was at least an underlying theme. That's why we don't think your child qualifies for an evaluation here. And I think that we need to be very careful. And we've said this a long time, and it's hard to, I think, what is the phrase that we've tended to use? I even put it in here. Oh, can't make a horse drink even though you bring them to water. Mm-hmm. We can't do that, but then we have to find a way to document, when we've done that, the refusals of the accommodations. And then is that refusal, I think it's a good part of that team discussion, do we think that refusal is because of that student's disability?
Right. Yeah. If the horse is hobbled and you wonder why it doesn't make its way over to the water, I got an idea. It's not motivation. So we do. Oh, boy.
I'm sorry.
Is hobbled not a good?
No, the hobbled horse drinking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it falls over on its side.
Thank you. Just continue with that visual. It's great. It's absolutely great. But I also, with that, and there's a lot of but also. I like mm-hmm. the but also or the and alsos. Mm-hmm. I'm working on that. But shut it. Here we go. When looking at it from a team, and I think when looking at making that hobbled horse drink the water, or if the hobbled horse can't drink the water, is it part of the disability? But also, there it is again, looking at it from that team, what have we done when that horse can't drink the water or won't? Have we pivoted, right? And not just, you know, the good type of pivot that you'd use in basketball, right? Where you keep one foot down. But the goal is moving.
Way to put it, coach. I like that.
Shut it. But the goal is not doing it like, I will say, the last year fourth graders that I helped assistant coach, right? Band-Aids and ice packs. That's where I work. Doing their version of pivot, which really is just keeping one pivot foot down, moving the other foot forward, and then using the other foot as a pivot, and they're moving it forward.
I think that's the Euro step they use in the NBA that I still can't understand, but whatever.
It all looks like traveling to me. Yeah. But I want traveling from 504 teams, right? Yeah. I don't want a pivot and stick.
Yep.
I want travel to show that if it's not moving and you get stuck, you're traveling forward to see what else you can do to make your, go back to your hobbled horse analogy, the horse be a little less hobbled to drink, or if they're going to be hobbled, now we might need to look at.
Maybe we move the water.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there a lot of moving analogies? Yeah,
there's too many analogies.
It's really great.
There's a horse playing basketball that's thirsty. I mean, that's the lesson here, I think.
A hobbled, a broken horse playing basketball that's thirsty. But I think when circling back to the caller in questions, within those situations, I do think hindsight is always going to be 20/20. I don't think if we had this similar situation play out with the Office for Civil Rights, if it was a U.S. Department of Education complaint, they do not tend to, and I could be wrong in the future, but they don't tend to second-guess team decisions as long as we have documented the team decision. However, state departments of education have a little bit different role there. And I think in this case, what we can learn from in merging the case with the caller, though not the same, you have to be able to look at that full bigger picture and look at all of the data as a team with the parent and documenting all of that when making your decision about whether a student moves on from qualifying from a 504 to now qualifying for an IEP under IDEA.
Thank you for tuning in to On the Call. If you have found value in our discussion and think your educator colleagues would as well, please share this podcast through text, word of mouth, staff meetings, chats in the teacher's lounge. Your support is what drives this podcast.
We work to bring real-life situations and practical tips to each episode. If you have a topic you would like to suggest or want to share your thoughts, please connect with us on social media or email us at podcast@ennisbritton.com.
A quick note, this podcast is intended to be used for general information only and is not legal advice. If you have a specific question, please consult an attorney.
We are looking forward to being on the call with you again soon.